When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
All right, I'm Ken Bader from Podcast Magazine, and we have two, not one, but two great podcasters here. We have James.
Yes.
From
Hide and Seek.
And Josh from?
True Crime Bullshit.
True Crime Bullshit. Now, we're not even going to asterisk that here today. We're just going to say True Crime Bullshit.
Well, I feel like considering the content we're discussing, shit isn't a huge deal.
All right. Well, let's get to the first question. And, you know, let's dig right into it, especially since we're already 5 minutes into it. And you talked a lot about in our original call about ethics and about getting it right. So tell me, how do you balance the respect for the victims and you have those ethics for your podcast? We'll start here.
Yeah, that's always a tricky one. And with my approach, I like to, when I choose the cases that I'm working on, I like to let the families know up front that we're going to probably dive into some things, whether it's stuff that you want to hear or it might be hard to hear. If I feel like it's relevant for the case and it's possibly beneficial for us to put that out there, I usually, before I do put something sensitive like that, I'll ask myself, you know, is this really necessary? And so I kind of try to keep the moral compass of what's the purpose of this. And so usually the family understands that. Of course, there's been stuff that I've had to share that her kids are going to hear this, you know. And so I always keep that in the back of my mind, too.
Yeah. I think for me, you know, when I started doing this, I started 3 years before the first episode came out. And I was diving into the data and learning about everyone involved. And then I sat down to write the first episode and was like, should I even be doing this? Because it was like, you know, the question I ask a lot in all of the shows I've produced is like, who owns a story? Yeah. And I think in this case, many people do. And the person who doesn't was me. And I thought about all the ramifications of me telling this story. And so I've talked to a lot of people. I have a good friend who is an attorney. I have Brooke from the Fall Line has done family advocacy work, and I run stuff by her constantly. I have a friend who is a journalist, and I run stuff by her. But my rule is there's no right way to reach out to family members, but there are many wrong ways.
Yeah.
And so I only reach out if I feel like the family is going to have something to gain from me having a conversation with them, or if they are actively looking for answers in their loved one's case. And then there's a thing, you know, that I've dealt with now a few times where we find out information that has not been made publicly available that could hurt a victim's family. And then you have to decide, is this valuable to moving the case or the investigation forward, and at what cost? And we're having that situation right now where we know things about one of Key's victims that his family does not. And I think for now, even though it's really important, we're going to have to sit on it until we can have those tough conversations with his family.
Well, let's stick with you, Josh, and we're getting right into the nitty-gritty here because it's all about running a successful podcast, successful true crime podcast specifically. And one of the things I probably have said about 12 times in the articles and podcast magazine is true crime is more than just entertainment. Certainly, it has to be entertaining to be engaging and to do the great things that we need to do through these podcasts. But they also need to engage and be educating at the same time. So I think that true crime serves a real purpose in society. Sometimes it's keeping cold cases alive. Sometimes it's getting into the psyches of some of these killers so that we can prevent them and so forth. So, Josh, especially with your work digging into the serial killer Israel Keyes, what do you think is the main service or main purpose of your podcast?
For me, it's always been about identifying these missing victims. Because you think, at a minimum, there are 9 families who have no idea what happened to their loved ones. And when Keyes completed suicide, the FBI stopped investigating. So there is no one looking for answers. So that's what's always driven me. And then as I got involved in the case and really got to know his immediate family, either on a personal level or just like reading about them and understanding their journeys a little better, secondary to that, it's been about protecting these people as best that I can while also telling the story. And sometimes those two goals are in complete opposition.
Yeah. James?
Well, for my season, what I do is I tend to focus on the missing individuals, right? And I usually focus on the ones that don't have a lot of public attention and are in smaller towns. I feel like with my approach, that's best suited for me. And I want to bring the story back to the limelight. I want to put it and give the families the attention that their loved one deserves. And it's challenging with as many missing people as there are, of course, that there's only so many people who can take this kind of challenge on, but I definitely want to focus on the ones when I do choose this type of story to cover, give the ones that just don't get the attention that other ones do. And there's nothing wrong with the other ones that do garnish the attention. That's good. But that's what I tend to focus on, where I feel like the hide-and-seek show, kind of the purpose of it.
Now, let's stick with you, James, because in producing a successful true crime podcast, and I give you guys a lot of credit. I've done podcasts. I could never do a true crime podcast. There's just way too much research, too much work to do to do a quality show at the level that you guys do. Talk a little bit about your research process and how you really get into the facts of these cases for your episodes.
I think a lot of it starts with just online. Searching, trying to find as many articles, going on discussion groups, research is from just contacting the detective as well, trying to figure out as many of the details as possible. A lot of reading from Reddit to Web Sleuth to, news articles. And so once you collect a lot of the information, then that's kind of when I begin to start asking my questions, try to get a good understanding before even contacting the family, just because you want to have your ducks in line before you approach them, because it's sensitive. You're asking them to open up a wound. So I tend to just try to get in front of it as much as I can before I even approach the family.
So you're just doing the internet thing. Are you renting a van and going all over the country for this stuff? You're not into the van life for this?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I definitely don't want to, before I even contact the family, you better be committed to this because it's a long, and it's long and it's heavy stuff that you're dealing with. So I tend to not put any hope in anybody's ideas on me jumping on board, because a lot of people ask me to take on these different cases, and so before I commit to it, I don't want to put any hope in anybody's basket, so I stay out of that. But once I commit, I'm on site.
Josh, your research process.
Yeah, I believe in doing completely original research. I've filed probably over 200 FOIA requests in the last 8 years. I have a wonderful team of researchers, and they get into more of the dark places of the internet that I choose not to go, which I guess is the privilege of having at least some level of success, is you don't have to do the awful stuff. And they find really great stuff, but we do not use it unless we can independently verify it, because I refuse to just believe anyone who has an anonymous name on Reddit who has a story about an interaction with geese, just because there's a lot of people who are looking for 15 minutes. But so, yeah, I believe in just going through. I've listened to, there's about 40 hours of geese interviews. I listen to them two or three times a year. I go through, I think there's over probably 30,000 pages of FOIA material that I go through constantly. And we've interviewed people when they want to talk or if their stories are necessary or going to, again, drive the investigation forward. But yeah, I'm really dubious of the internet, and I'm really dubious even of just like local news reports, because we've seen a lot of errors in them. So yeah, that is how I research, and therapy is very expensive.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit, and if any of you, any of your fans would like to ask you any questions, I'm going to ask this question. If you want to line up at the mic, please feel free to ask any questions that you may have of our guests here, of our experts. But a real important question, and we covered this in a series in Podcast Magazine, is in essence, you know, how does true crime change the true crime podcaster? Case in point, you know, this will surprise you. I listen to a lot of true crime, you know, covering true crime. You know, it's kind of my job. And there are times that I need to turn it off. It doesn't happen too often, but there are times where I'm walking, and I just got to turn it. I can't even take this, and I could take a lot. So especially for both of you, but especially you, Josh, digging into the psyche of a serial killer, how does this change you, if at all?
The first few years were really challenging for me. You know, I didn't entirely anticipate what I was digging into. And, you know, like I said, I was listening to just hours and hours of Keys detailing some of his crimes or playing games with the FBI. And I think specifically he talked about murdering a couple out of Vermont, Bill and Lorraine Currier, and went into graphic detail and told the story so callously and cavalierly, and it's something, once you listen to that, it lives rent-free in your brain for the rest of your life. And so the first two or three years, I just, reading about his family and the toll it took on his family and reading about what happened to his victims, I was a mess. And no, I literally got into therapy. Thankfully, BetterHelp was a sponsor. It's, you know, I used to love hiking. I don't do it anymore. Because whenever we do, I'm like, there's a single straight white man in his 40s. Why is he hiking alone? Because he's going to kill us. And it's funny, but it has really haunted me in a lot of weird ways. And I don't think of myself as a paranoid person, but just when you saturate your life with this stuff, it comes up in really unexpected ways.
Yeah, you start looking over your shoulder when you used to not look over your shoulder before. Yeah. James, how's it affecting you?
I'd say similar ways. I definitely, with my approach, I'm looking for the bad guy. So I'm constantly kind of poking at things, trying to figure out where.
So you're kind of like Batman.
Kind of. I definitely don't have the tools or the equipment he has, but nor the money. But I'm definitely having a different type of interaction with people, where I'm pissing some people off a little bit. I'm dealing with drug dealers and some people who I've talked to who are also killers. So it over the course of three seasons, I've become a little bit more jagged. I'd be honest with you and tell you that, like, it's hard when you're dealing with people who are constantly pushing back at you. If you think about even law enforcement with police officers, how when you're dealing with that on a regular basis, daily, day in and day out, how it becomes challenging. And so sometimes it's as much as I think I can pull away and I can decompress, I can also see myself sometimes, even at home, just being short.
Yeah.
And so it's not easy dealing with, but maybe I needed to go to therapy. I don't know.
BetterHelp.com/TCB.
Is there anybody here for BetterHelp? But you bring up, you mentioned law enforcement, and I know having done some work with first responders, empathy fatigue is a real thing. In talking to a number of true crime podcasters, they've even admitted to you hear so much, bad stuff that, eventually you kind of cut things off yourself where you don't have that feeling. Have you experienced that at all? Or?
Yeah, it's like desensitizing yourself. Yeah, it's definitely, you hear things now and you're like, it doesn't hit you the same way. I even go back and I hate listening to my own show. I hate listening to episodes. But if I went back the other day and listened just to the first couple episodes, and I'm thinking, man, you sound even different, just how you speak. And so it's, I'm trying to keep that balance. I'm trying to make sure that I don't lose that empathy and I don't lose that compassion. But it's keeping it aware and in the front of my mind is something that I always try to do.
Josh, do you just get help from BetterHelp and everything's better?
No, you kind of, a little bit intentionally and a little bit unintentionally, have to divorce yourself from it over time. Because I think it can be all-consuming. And in order to, move on with what you're doing and keep the investigation going, you have to compartmentalize. And it's weird because for the most part, I have it every now and again. Something will just hit me in the right way and I'll start sobbing at my computer. My partner came in one day and mentioned someone's name that happened to be someone in the case. And I just lost it. And I was like, oh, I guess the compartment got jiggled loose a little bit. it's a weird thing because you have to be a little insensitive to be able to do this. Yeah. And I am not an insensitive person. And so I struggle with it all the time.
I broke out sobbing today because of my fantasy football team, but that's, can BetterHelp help with that?
I don't think anyone can help with that.
I don't think even BetterHelp can help me. But tying this into the idea of running a successful true crime podcast is that you have to balance, in essence, I would guess, an intelligent guess, the ability to dig through some of these hard things, even pictures and court records and so forth, but also being continuing your passion, because it's not foreign for anybody, true crime podcaster or anybody, to eventually either get bored or see it as a job. And when you start seeing it as a job, you're like, okay, I don't want to do it anymore, or I do it and fans can see or hear that it's not quite the same. Neither of your podcasts are like that. So how do you kind of keep that balance? Do you keep a couple hours and find your best whiskey, or do you watch comedy for 3 hours? James, what do you do? Yeah.
Whiskey. Yeah. I just get right to it. Yeah, that's hard. It's actually a balance that I've been kind of continually challenging myself with is not trying to create a show, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Not trying to produce this show and still having the hunger and persistency of trying to find the truth. Because I feel like sometimes I got to check myself with that, making sure you're not trying to make this extra spooky or extra serious or extra tense. The show would do it by itself. And the story is not something that I try to overdo. Like you said, there's a form of entertainment there, but I always just try, like I said, I go back to, why am I doing this? What's the purpose of this story? What's the purpose of sharing this? And typically I've gotten, my listeners, I would say, have agreed that I tend to keep a fair balance scale.
Josh?
I balance by doing seasons. And I know it annoys people, but I take 4 months off between seasons, and that's how I stay sane. Because earlier today I was taking notes because I have to put out a preview for the next season, and I was writing the things that were going to be catchy, and it felt so gross. Because they're James and I have talked a lot the past few days about what we do and how we do it, and there's so many similarities, and we're both quite earnest people and we care about what we're doing. But at the same time, this is a business and the business is a machine. Yeah. And people get upset if you don't put out an episode one day, or if you haven't updated Patreon, and there's all this stuff that you think about, and then to turn this story, this investigation, this really grim, awful thing that has happened into a business can be soul crushing. So I think seasonality, a lot of Malbec, and anything on Bravo is how I stay sane.
They just said BravoCon, didn't they? Or is that coming up?
I'm missing it right now for you guys.
Josh is here for us, guys. Give him a hand.
Traveling the world, looking for clues, connecting the dots, these are the most important components of solving a mystery like the Keys case, and for playing the delightfully mysterious and endlessly fun mobile game, June's Journey. In June's Journey, you'll travel back to the Roaring Twenties and investigate the mysterious death of June Parker's sister. Throughout the game, you'll uncover scandalous secrets as you traverse exotic destinations and surprising new storylines. As you know, my life revolves around investigating true crime and finding respite from it in the scandals and luxury of the housewives. And June's Journey is truly the perfect blend of the two. Put your detective skills to use and build the estate of your dreams in this epic, dynamic game that I cannot stop playing. You want to solve mysteries? You got it. You want to bask in the scandals of the elite? They've got that too. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
So, you know, especially for those folks, since we're here to talk about running a successful true crime podcast, we may have some folks here that, you know, God forbid, might think about doing one of these. So from that standpoint, you know, how did you, I guess, you know, learn to podcast? You know, what was the spark that says, okay, I want to do this and I want to do this right. Here are some of the steps that I need to take. Is it equipment? Is it testing my voice? Is it researching? Yeah, James, we'll start with you. You know, how did you start a successful podcast?
Ooh, I don't know how I started. I honestly don't. I wish I could tell you guys the truth. But I honestly went to school, YouTube, Google, figured it out. That's honestly the only, if anybody ever considers it, that's the first thing I tell them is you're going to have to put in the hours and time I did. I can't teach you. You're going to have to teach yourself. It's school, YouTube, and Google. And then, of course, you're researching what kind of equipment do you need and how difficult. I didn't know anything about music software programs and how to create a podcast. So that's what I did. I don't know what you did, but.
Well, I started with 3 unsuccessful podcasts.
That never happens.
And I learned a great deal from them. And, you know, this, I always knew I was going to do this show, and so I kind of started building on that while I was doing my other 3 shows and kind of turning them all into a brand and building them under the same umbrella and, you know, dropping little hints here and there and, like, building an audience and then converting the audience. So, and again, the business stuff is very boring, I'm sure, to 90% of you. And then in terms of, like, how did I decide to do the show and in a way that I thought would be successful was I looked at a very saturated market and was like, what is missing from the market? And I knew with Keys, where I had a pre-existing interest already, it was not a narrative style we were used to. Mm-hmm. Usually we know who the victim is and then we're looking for the killer, and this was the opposite of that. And it was also this weird situation where there was a serial killer who had traveled to almost every state in the country, who was targeting men and women, and he was arrested indicted and died before anyone even knew he existed. And so I thought that was like a really interesting story. And I remember, because it was years that I was working on this, and I just, it was like white knuckling it, like, oh gosh, what if someone like next week launches a Keys podcast? So I think I was just lucky that I guess cornered the Keys market first.
So, you know, when it comes to equipment and platforms, in fact, let's even go here. James, I believe your podcast is on Anchor. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you know, I truly believe that you know, there are different tools. There's no bad tools. There's just really different tools and different platforms depending on what you want to do. Right. I know that there are some podcast purists who are like, no, Anchor, terrible, which I don't necessarily agree with. But you know, talk about the platform and then maybe a little bit of the equipment you use. You know, why do you choose what you choose in order to produce your podcast?
Well, I use Anchor just because when Spotify came in and when they took Joe Rogan on, they were also reaching out to podcasters and wanting to switch. So that's how I got into Anchor. You know, and the equipment that I got, I mean, at first, I didn't know I was going to make this as my career. So I was getting kind of like the good equipment, but not the great equipment. So, and yes, there's a difference in investing wise. So, but I use Logic Pro for the software program to record in. Like I said, we host from Anchor, but I can get into the details if someone wants to know about the specific types of equipment. But yeah, I'd usually just would say GarageBand, any kind of software program that you have, start there. You don't need to invest into the expensive stuff yet. Get used to the terms and understanding how the audio format works.
Josh. Yesterday, James asked me what equipment I used, and I was like, I don't really know. I've made a lot of friends in the podcasting community, and so I rely on them. Tim and Lance from Missing Maura Murray told me what mic to get, and Charlie from Crime Lines told me what Rode mic to get, and so I just like ask people who are smarter than me.
That is the real tip right there. Find people that are smarter than you. Right. So let's get into the editing process a little bit. Do you do your own editing, or do you find people that are are better than you are?
I'm too much of a control freak. I do my own editing, and I edit as I record, which I do not recommend. But it's mostly just because up until recently, I was doing everything by myself. And so you would like research, and then you would write, and then you would record, and then you would go to edit. And at that point, it's just like word salad, because you've listened to and written the same thing so many times. So now I edit as I go, which is really annoying. And if I ever released like the bloopers, it's just me cussing at myself the whole time. But that to me is like you have the most control and you can really like sit within the moment rather than the moment kind of like existing in the ether, because it's no longer a moment anymore. It's just like words on a page.
Yeah, I would say with my editing process, it's difficult it's very complex actually with when I start investigating a case, I'll spend hours, right, interviewing people, looking up the information, research, and then I'll be recording all these interviews, and sometimes these interviews are 3-4 hours, maybe even 5 hours long. And so we were talking about this earlier, and he's like, you record everything? I'm like, everything. And so you have to then go back into those interviews, find those key points, drag them, plug them in, score it. I mean, I do everything right now. Like he said, control freak, you kind of also have to know all the details in order for me to trust that I can give this to. So I have someone who joined my team this year, her name's Sarah, who's been great about sitting on every interview and all those Zoom calls. So I have someone else to be able to assist in that process, but I do everything. Yeah. I also take out the garbage too, everything.
How often do you take out the garbage?
Every day.
That's a lot of garbage.
Yeah.
When it comes to editing, you know, I've found, and I'm interested to hear what you think, is I've found that in the editing process, it seems like I learn more. Yeah, there's even when you're engaged, you're listening to your interviewee, you're thinking about so many things that you miss, you know, yeah. a couple minutes. It's like driving home. You drive home the same way all the time, and you, how did I even get there? Yeah. I just do it. So as you're going through the editing process, do you find little gems or, hey, you know what, I forgot about that. Let's cover that a little bit more. Or does it force you to go in possibly a different direction because of the editing process that you're doing yourself?
I had that happen many times where you're caught in the moment of this heated argument with somebody. You're at this tension and you're going back and forth and you're sitting there editing. You're like, oh, shit. Like you totally forgot that. You didn't catch that. So I've had that happen many times. And of course, I'm trying to learn from that too. Mm-hmm. Like, because you get into these moments, you don't want to lose that opportunity to be able to say, wait, what did you just say? You know, and so many times, yeah.
The researchers and I use Slack, and there's a joke that, which is true, that the busiest days on Slack are the days where I'm editing, because I'll be listening and be like, oh, holy shit, what? And then I'll like have to go to Slack and be like, did anyone else catch this? So yeah, constantly. And that's the problem with being a procrastinator, because usually I start writing the day the episode is supposed to be released. It's like, we're like, oh no, now we have to like press pause or find something else because we just heard something we never heard before. And I think that's the thing with what we do is, you know, I just this week, for the first time ever, decided to put a calendar where all of Keyes's travels were with our potential victims with the name is 44, which seems like such an obvious thing to do. We should have done it 5 years ago. But there's so much information, it's hard to synthesize it all and order it all and make sense of it all. So you are finding new stuff out of old material every single day.
Yeah. When I do my editing, usually most of the stuff I edit out is my own stupidity, not the stuff from... Yeah. I said, I actually asked that question? Edit that out. So in the process, as we're in this editing bubble, if you will, and we're talking about running a successful true crime podcast, what is the number one thing you might have learned in this process by a mistake that you made, where you said, yep, all right, I'm never going to do that again. That's, you know, you've got a smile on your face, Josh, so I think there's already something in your head. Go ahead.
like I said, I started researching this years before the first episode went out, which was brilliant, but unfortunately, it's not something you can afford to do ever again. like every time I go into a hiatus, I'm like, oh, I only have 3 months to research as opposed to 3 years. So I think it's putting in as much work as you can before you drop an episode or a season. And then also just like I said, I'm a really bad procrastinator and it always gets me into trouble. But there is that like what I do is so emotionally taxing that sometimes you just need to like push it off for as long as possible.
I would honestly piggyback off of that and just say like, if you're gonna start a show, if you're ever gonna release something, once you start releasing, then there's an expectation and having that, you know, built up hopper of maybe episodes would be a great idea. Don't start releasing and have maybe only two or three, have a good amount would be my recommendation, because we hear it when we're 10 minutes late from people. The only person's laughing is this guy over here, because we get it, because it's people let us know. So having a good amount, you know, at least prepared to understand how long this takes you to actually produce an episode as well.
Yeah. So, and I like that both of you gentlemen do seasons, because it seems as though you could really dig in and then really plan for that next season. Not every true crime podcast does that. Did you go into your podcast with the idea, I got to do seasons? Or did you have this idea, it's like, okay, we're just going to do one every week or every other week and we'll do it for as long as we can?
I knew I was gonna do seasons, but I never thought there would be quite a big gap between them. I kind of thought like, okay, here's season one, and then I'll take a few weeks off and do season two, which was really foolish. Now there's, you know, I take time off in between, but in the beginning it was like, yeah, I'll do a season, take a week off, do another one.
I did. I didn't plan on doing. I didn't know what I was doing when I started this, honestly. Once I committed to doing podcasting full time and I quit my insurance career to pursue this, I didn't want to have just Hide and Seek podcast season 44. I wanted to have other shows. And so I'm actually in the process of creating other shows under my production company, and also looking to bring others on. So I'm going to always continue Hide and Seek, but I got other shows I want to bring on and not do something that's necessarily as intense all the time. Maybe something a little bit more that's lighthearted every week. So got plans.
Yeah. Circling back, and please, we have some time if you would like to ask any questions of James and Josh. Feel free. Go to the mic. Or you could just yell from there if we're going to cause you pain. We don't want to do that.
We'll start with this question. How did you find your producers? Did they contact, or sorry, not producers, but researchers? Did they like reach out to you, or did you post looking for people, or how does that work?
Do you want to go for it? Okay. Mine found me, and it's going back to like control. I never intended to work with people, and then you get really far into it, and you're like, I can't do this by myself. And there were, you know, I get tips all the time. I get people wanting to support the show in that way all the time, and I just, it requires a fundamental amount of trust, and you have to know someone well enough to know that they're going to practice good judgment, because, again, what we're doing, while it is entertainment to many, is detrimental and quite sensitive to the people who matter most. And so, you know, the first person who's in the audience today was an attorney, and she was like, I have some ideas and I'd like to talk to you. And we went to a bar and I brought my murder map and we looked like two weirdos in this bar. And I knew instantly that she was trustworthy and ethical. And then once she got her way in, I was a little more pliable, and so we were doing these get vocal video sessions after each episode, and there were two women, ladies, two gals who just were like thinking in the same way I was thinking, and they never said anything on air without talking to me about it first, and I was like, okay, like, you have great judgment. And then they were like, well, we've also been talking to this other guy, and he's straight white man, but trust us, we've vetted him, he seems fine. And so that's the team. And then that was it for a while. And then we had this like digital genius who was like finding all of these keys, data breaches. And it turns out she and I share a very good friend that we didn't know about. And I was like, okay, you're trustworthy too. But it's not something I've ever actively looking for, just because like having a close-knit circle of people I trust implicitly is the most important part, and I would rather overwork myself than bring in someone that I can't trust.
One more question, sorry. This is for both of you. I guess it's looking for advice. I actually started a podcast with a friend of mine, where it's called Running Through Hell, so it's about true crime cases that involve runners, either getting attacked or murdered like while running or vice versa. So 5 episodes in, my co-host had to quit due to personal reasons, and now I don't know where to go from here. Like, if your advice would be to somehow pivot and do it by myself, or start like a totally new podcast by myself, or I don't know if you've had any other like similar challenges where you've had to like pivot from your original idea and how you handled it.
I had a situation happen where it wasn't a co-host, but I had a guy that was working on my first season, just middle of the day, walked downstairs, out the door, said he'd be back, never came back. I'm like,
was it something you said?
Oh, gosh. No. no, but I, in that situation, I adjust, adapt, and improvise. I mean, that's what I had to do. I mean, for your show and what you're doing, you know, if you want to stand behind what you're doing, and if you feel like you can take on that workload. But also, don't be hesitant to tell your listeners or to take that break, or if you need to do it every other week or whatever your schedule is, would be my recommendation.
Yeah, I would say that you have two avenues. One is you're going to have to do a lot more work. And I will tell you this, it's way more work than you ever think it's going to be. But then you have complete autonomy over what you're doing. Or you bring someone on and then you have a more balanced take on things and you have less work to do. So I think it's just whatever works for you and how passionate you are about what you're doing.
To be honest, I was doing most of the work already, so she was kind of the entertainment side. But thanks.
Yeah,
you just tackle everything like these guys do, and it's never a problem.
Is it never a problem?
So our audience brings up a good point in that you sometimes when you have other people that are involved, you need to pull back and make sure that you stay on brand. Yeah, it even when you're doing things yourself, sometimes you kind of have a tendency to go off the rails. Do you ever find yourself, whether it's the editing process or interviewing process, or even sometimes just before you put out an episode and say, you know what, this just isn't quite on brand. You know, I need to change this up. I need to go back to the drawing board. Anything like that, James?
Yeah, I've had that happen lots of times. Where I don't like the way the episode sounds, likes, and I think this is gonna suck, honestly. And then the listener's like, this was a great show. And I'm like, I don't understand my listeners, apparently. But I've had that happen many times. But I take a look at it like this. I'm an amateur at this, and I'm growing in this process. So from season one to season three, people who have been following me have always said, like, it's been awesome to watch you grow and see that. So to me, this is just what my work looks like. And this is what the journey's been like. And so, do I like it? Absolutely not. I still don't like my stuff today. But I'm just growing, you know? We're just getting better.
Yeah, there's been a few times where I've had to press pause because I just looked at the content of an episode and been like, it's not ready. Either we have not done as much investigation as possible to put this out into the world, or it's just not ready by my own standards. And to James's point, like every time I put out an episode, I'm like, this is the one where they all leave me. Like they're gonna hear this and think it's trash and they're all gonna leave me and I'm gonna have to go back to corporate America. Like, no, I live in constant fear of like putting out a bad episode.
Well, Dr. Shiloh from LA Not So Confidential never lives in fear, right?
Never. Or always. Josh, I think when I think of your show, I think of what a lot of people kind of dream of doing, right? Having the luxury and the time to just sit with one case, whether you're just a person, whether you're an investigator, because they don't have the time and luxury to do that. I think both of you can answer this. You've talked about the downsides to it, but is that incredibly satisfying for the rest of us that are curious, that would like to know what it's like to sit down with a case and give it the attention it deserves? What's the good piece that comes out of this, and probably why you guys keep doing this?
I always look at the people who do episodic shows, and I'm like, I don't know how you do that. Just because for me, like, I do need to, like, really sit with a case for an extended period of time, and I like getting into the weeds. I'm a data nerd. I use a lot of Excel spreadsheets for my investigation. I just like immersing myself in it. I think it's really cool that, you know, along with everything else that we've talked about, but I think it's really cool that, you know, 9 years in, we can go to Alaska and, like, really dig deeper and deeper into this case and have a really nuanced understanding of not only Keyes, but his family and some of his victims and potential victims. And, you know, the more you look, the more stuff makes sense. And it's a great joy, as much as it is as deeply sad and frustrating to really live inside this case and have so many opportunities to hopefully move the investigation forward and bring justice to families.
Yeah, I would say I agree with what you're saying, but I enjoy this process thoroughly. I love getting into the details, just like he said. That was day one growing up as a family, Unsolved Mysteries, old school. I'm sure everybody here has probably seen the same show. But I just enjoy getting into the details. Now, there's definitely a calling for the shows that have just every episode's a different case. There is a definite calling for that too. Just, I know for my personality, my approach, and what I could bring to this community is the deep dive stuff, and I love it. I love this stuff. And there's honestly not a day where I feel like I'm working. I know that's really cliche to say, but I quit my job to do this. Like, this is what I truly am passionate about. So
I think also, and I correct me if I'm wrong, after knowing you for 2 days, I feel like we're both pretty sensitive, empathic people. And I think that lends itself to long form investigations because you do just get so emotionally invested. It would be hard for me to like do a case and then leave it behind.
Traveling the world, looking for clues, connecting the dots, these are the most important components of solving a mystery like the Keys case, and for playing the delightfully mysterious and endlessly fun mobile game, June's Journey. In June's Journey, you'll travel back to the Roaring Twenties and investigate the mysterious death of June Parker's sister. Throughout the game, you'll uncover scandalous secrets as you traverse exotic destinations and surprising new storylines. As you know, my life revolves around investigating true crime and finding respite from it in the scandals and luxury of the housewives. And June's Journey is truly the perfect blend of the two. Put your detective skills to use and build the estate of your dreams in this epic, dynamic game that I cannot stop playing. You want to solve mysteries? You got it. You want to bask in the scandals of the elite? They've got that too. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, you quipped that, you know, you might have to go to back to corporate life and so forth. If you weren't doing these podcasts, if somebody said, you know, there will no longer be any podcasts of any genre whatsoever, and you had to get another job, not a real job, this is a real job, but if you had to get another job, what would you be doing, James?
I probably would have stayed in insurance. It was an 8-year career, and I had built my business up, but after my first season with Hide and Seek and just the success and the honestly, there's a chase in it. It was hard to go back to selling insurance again. Yeah. So, but if I probably would have stayed.
Does anybody need an annuity? No, never mind. Josh.
Before I was doing this, I had the coolest but also the dumbest job ever. I was an inspiration manager for a fashion brand. Which was just like I was in charge of finding cool things to inspire our designers. But I got burnt out on it because I just remember like being in a meeting. It was like 2 a.m. and there were like people crying in a corner, and I was like, "It's pants." Like, so I quit, and then I started writing Medicare manuals, which I will never go back to doing that. So yeah, this needs to work, you guys.
And now you make people cry by listening to a deep podcast. Well, in the last 12 minutes or so that we have, and we could certainly have time for at least one or two more questions, so if you have a question, please feel free to go to the mic. And we do have a question, so I'll hold my question. Please, go ahead and ask.
So a little bit different than what we've been talking about, but James, I really appreciate how you humanize victims mm-hmm. and go into more of the positive parts of who they are, despite what may have happened in the past, especially talking with their families. I'm wondering, for me, I think it would be kind of nerve-wracking to interview or approach suspects who maybe you haven't contacted before, or serial killers. And I'm just kind of wondering how you deal with that, if it's something that you're now used to and no big deal, or if kind of the unexpected part is how you deal with that.
Yeah, well, it's weird to kind of compare this, but in sales, you have to get a, like, you have to be okay with being told no. You got to get okay with them hanging up the phone on you and calling the next person, having positive attitude. So I kind of try to transfer that. You just ask the question, right? And sometimes those questions are very uncomfortable and challenging, and sometimes you get a heated response. I just constantly think about who we're looking for. If you know, someone's got to speak up, and so here we are. And you kind of just have to push through it. I used to kind of think about it a lot, and it would kind of get at me. I'm human. Like, of course, I got feelings, and they do get hurt. So it's hard sometimes when you're pushing to try to find the truth and people are pushing back, and especially when you don't feel like they have anything to do with it. Then it just feels like no one wants to support what I'm trying to do here. So working through those emotions sometimes, but you just got to push through. And like I said, I think about Nancy, Logan, and Brittany. Every time you're in those moments, they're not here to speak up for themselves. They're not here to fight or defend for themselves. So that's the real motivator. When you sit down and tell these families you're going to do everything you can, you know, those moments leave impressions on you. And so you think about them when you're walking into those moments where it's tense and or it's uncomfortable. They're the motivator, really.
For me, it never gets easier. Because I live in constant fear of re-traumatizing someone. Mm-hmm. And the stakes are so high and they're not my own. And that's something like I go to bed with every single night. And you know, Kaz, who's here, can tell you every time I have to reach out to a family, I'm distraught. And it's like, should I? Shouldn't I? Is this the right time? Is there ever a right time? And suddenly you're inserting yourself into the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And sometimes they're really happy that someone cares, and sometimes they don't want to hear from you. And like I said before, there's a million wrong ways to do it, and there's no right way. So I live in constant fear of it.
Thank you.
Please.
Thank you all for being here today. I know, James, you've kind of touched on this already about expanding your platform and kind of taking on more shows. This question, I think, is going to lean more towards Josh. With your serialized approach with the Israel Keyes case, do you conceivably see your work with that ever coming to an end? Which, as a huge fan of your show, I probably couldn't see it coming to an end, but what would you imagine that's going to look like in the future?
So I approach every season as though it's going to be the last, and then just every season we find something that opens up a whole new channel of investigation. This season there were three different things. Season 6 starts in a couple weeks, and I am approaching this one like it's going to be the last. I don't know if that's true, though, but I'm kind of doing everything I always wanted to do, like in the weird stuff, like licensing the expensive songs I always wanted to play and naming the episodes after really meaningful things that I would do only in the last season, but you never know. And I think, you know, Kaz and I have been caucusing all day with some of the new research we have, and I'm like, I went in thinking this was 8 episodes, but we might have 24 now. So I don't know, but I have, I've got probably like 6 to 10 cases on the back burner that, you know, and I took a year off and did Kelly Cochran, and it wrecked me. But so it's not implausible that we might do that again. I think the Keyes case is really important to me, and we also will never know if it's over because we don't know how many people he killed. So it will live with me for the rest of my life. It's just a matter of like how that manifests in the show. I don't know. I just don't want to be like episode 439, Keys ate a ham sandwich on Friday the 13th. Like, I don't want to be that show. So,
thank you.
And one last question from our audience. Please, go ahead.
Wow. This is very intimidating. James, I have a question for you. You kind of referenced that you wanted to expand upon hide and seek in other different avenues. Can you describe like what you're looking into or what you're interested in so your listeners can hear?
Yeah, it's a great question, thanks. I'm looking honestly at this time right now for people who wanna create a podcast. I'm looking for people who are wanting to create anything that's true crime. If they have an idea that they wanna pitch and they're interested in creating a show, I'm all for bringing them on. Obviously, there's a process to that just for me to want to make sure, wanting to make sure it would be a good fit. But for a while, I wanted to be signed by iHeartRadio. I wanted to get on with Spotify or with one of the major networks. And I was at a conference this year, and I quickly realized that I wanted to be the network. I wanted to be able to work with people who were in my position that wanted to create a show. And so that's what I'm looking for, is people who are inspired, wanted to create a show, and who are willing to put in the work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And so that's what I'm looking for.
Well, that's a outstanding segue to my next question, which is, you know, what advice do you have for folks, other than, you know, coming on your network? And, you know. But yeah, we'll start with James. You know, what advice would you have for folks out there that are really, really thinking seriously about doing their own true crime podcast?
Ooh, I would just say my one advice would be is make sure that you're committed to what you're about to start. You might think that you know what you're about to walk into. And again, not every show needs to be as deep a dive like I do, you know, so there's that side of it too. But just know what you're about to walk into. You're about to open up some wounds. You're going to talk about some stuff you're going to need to be sensitive about. Their family members will listen. So just be sensitive and be committed to the process. Don't back out. I've seen that happen one too many times where people contact me and they say they want to start something. I give them some advice and then I check back in with them and then they're pulling the plug on it. And so remember, you're pulling the plug on that and that family that you contacted if you're going to do something. So I would say stay committed to the process.
Josh?
I would say know your place. Again, and I cannot reiterate this enough, what we're talking about is the worst thing that's ever happened to people, and it didn't happen to you. And you don't know the family in most cases, and you don't know these people, and you're talking about them as if you do. I remember going to a funeral, and this preacher who had clearly never met my uncle was talking about him like he knew him, and it was insulting. And so there's this thing where it's like, humanize them, which you do, but don't do it performatively. And also, like, just be so ethically minded and aware of your blind spots. If you even second guess whether you should be doing something, don't do it. Because if you're second guessing it, there's a reason for it. And find people who know more than you. And that's the smartest thing I accidentally did, was find, you know, family advocates and attorneys and real journalists who went to journalism school, and psychologists who know way more than me about how to be ethically responsible in telling these stories and care about the people whose stories you're telling.
Well, it's a great segue to the last question. And we may have already covered it, because I think you've got at least 8 more seasons to go, right? But yeah, as we close here, especially because we have a lot of fans of true crime bullshit and hide and seek here, Josh, you know, what's next for you and for your podcast? What do you got coming up?
So, like I said, we have 3 new-ish channels of investigation that I think, and Kaz will make a face, and I will correct myself if the face tells me I'm incorrect, are probably 3 of the most profoundly important channels that have come across in this entire investigation. Okay, she's agreeing with me. So I think we're going to go places we haven't been before. You know, last season, Keys got caught up in a couple data breaches, and through those breaches, we were able to find a lot of information about what he was doing online and burner phone numbers he was using and fake email addresses he was using and accounts he was using. And through that, we're able to find some connections to some potential victims. So that's a big draw. We also got the Essex Police Department's files on the Courier case. I had been operating solely off of the FBI's version of events. And boy, oh boy, were those files groundbreaking, because they did not redact nearly as much as the FBI did, and we have new information that I don't think anyone else has. And that has been with us this whole time, but we just were looking in the wrong places. And the thing with Keys is, like, any fragment of info you get opens a whole new door, because we know so little about him and his MO. And I think just, you know, Kaz and I have read a single file from that FOIA response, and it has been eye-opening. So I think it's going to be an exciting season. I hope it's going to be an exciting season. And I've also traveled a lot this year. I have been gone more than I've been home, going to places Keys was, going to places where potential victims were, and we're learning a lot.
And James, we'll close with you. What's up next for Hide and Seek?
So we, for those who are listening to my third season, we're actually headed back to Michigan to handle some things. And then I'm actually tapping in. I hate the idea of Patreon because it feels like I'm asking people for money because that's what you are asking. But we are going to provide more video content. So that's something that's new for, I feel like in the podcast world, there is like a side where obviously everything's audio, but if you can kind of have a visual of what that interview was like or see what their response was like, I've been taking a videographer with me on these trips, so I'm going to be releasing more video content. And then I got three shows that we're working on for after Hide and Seek that we'll release under the production company. So,
awesome. Well, let's give these guys a hand. Thank you all for joining us. I think these guys have said they were going to stick around until 8:30, 9 o'clock.
They'll
stick around for a little while, so please ask them any questions that you have. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.